Spurs hoop. Back to Blake Griffin. Lines up the three, and it's through. 6'11", 245. Driving Blake Griffin to the rim. For another deuce, 20 for Blake.
I wanted to just come out and play hard, you know, being very limited in my knowledge of our offense. Coach Van Gundy did a great job of, like, just putting in five things that we could go to, and we ran them to death. They worked, you know, and everybody just played hard. The fans here, just for the Pistons and sports in general, are incredible. You could feel the energy tonight, and that was a big boost for us, big boost for me. We got some guys that can really play. Came up with big stops when we needed them. Playing with Andre was a blast. We just got to come in and play. We'll figure it out. Our chemistry will get better and better.
I think that just sort of scratched the surface. I really do. 24, 10, 5 assists. I mean, I don't know if the numbers will always be that, but I didn't really have a very good framework in for him to work out of. He was just having to sort of create stuff on his own. So I think maybe we can help him a little bit more than we did tonight.
I've enjoyed every moment. There's a reason I came back to Philly, just to be a part of the team, be a part of the environment. Be a backup quarterback in this situation, to step, you know, be in this situation, it just says a lot about this team and how everyone has helped, you know, all the guys who've gotten injured have been there every step of the way to help the guys that are in front of them. Carson has helped me tremendously, but I take great honor to be a part of this team, to be in this situation. It's a great responsibility, and, you know, we still have a lot of work left this week to, you know, prepare for this game, but I'm excited for what's ahead. Grateful to be in the Super Bowl with these guys, and obviously Tom Brady, one of the greatest to play the game. I'm excited to compete against the Patriots come Super Bowl Sunday. They've had a great team for a long time, and, you know, I'm excited to go in there with my team to, you know, go face them.
Your preparation is to the nth degree. You've got to study every situation and understand how they're going to attack you and how we can attack them. But you got to play for 60 minutes. You got to play a full ball game against these guys.
He's a dynamic player. Needs a ton to our offense. You know, he really has since he got to our team. It's always great when he's out there. We'll have to find different ways to get other people the ball if he's not. You know, obviously we're all hoping he's, you know, as healthy as he can be, ready to go. I've played with him for a long time. I've thrown him a lot of footballs. He knows exactly what to do. He knows where to expect the ball, when to expect it. You know, he's just a tremendous player for our team.
Obviously, with New England, it all starts with Brady. I mean, he's, you know, he's the ultimate fixer. I mean, he can overcome a lot of holes. He can overcome a lot of problems, a lot of mistakes throughout the course of the game. There's just not been many guys like him. And with the way Belichick gets them ready to play, and then you sprinkle in the talent he has around him on both sides of the ball, it's hard to pick against them. And we saw it last week. Everyone thought they were dead to rights against Jacksonville. And, you know, if he's close enough, he's within striking distance there at the end. You know, it's hard to go against them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza. 10 minutes after 3 o'clock as we get rolling on a Friday edition. And you know what that means? It's a free-for-all Friday right here on the Extravaganza. Coming up on the big program on ESPN 106.5, the ticket, where we are, always have been, and will remain, Toledo sports leader. I got a couple of very good guests to talk about NFL football, Super Bowl style. Yesterday, we focused a little bit on the New England Patriots. Talked to a guy from PatsPulpit.com up there in Beantown. And today, we go to the city of brotherly love, the place where they hate Santa. They bomb him with snowballs and batteries. A place where they love cheesesteak and not heart health, and a place where they believe in fly, eagles, fly. Joining us from Philly, actually, technically, Jim Cushlin, he is from Philly, but he is in the Great White North. No, not quite Canada, but pretty damn close. He's in Minneapolis for Super Bowl 52. Cody Benjamin, BleedingGreenNation.com. That's the Philly Eagles SB Nation website. So we are... We're going into the belly of the Philly beast. How does that sound, Cush?
Oh, I like it. That sounds real good.
I do, too, because yesterday I talked. You know, I had far too many good things to say about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, mainly because I'm just an honest guy. I can't help it.
Right.
You know, I do. I don't like certain things, but I can't not praise them if they are praiseworthy. It's just the way that it is. I mean, there's some people I do not like, but I recognize and respect the greatness. And guess what? The Patriots are one of them. Today, I don't recognize or respect the greatness of Nick Foles, but I'm going to cheer for him, and I'm going to cheer for the Eagles because, well, that's what anybody outside of the geographical region known as New England should do. Just simply by, I don't know, common sense, decency, the natural order of things. If you're rooting for the team that already has 5 Super Bowl championships, the quarterback that has 5, the coach that has 5, If you're rooting for them to win their sixth, and they have the background that they have, instead of the team that has never won one, but that has always represented the fighting spirit of, you know, a blue-collar type of big city like Philadelphia, which is competing against virtually all odds, their second-year superstar quarterback who evolved and really broke out in his second year, Carson Wentz, could have been, might have been, the MVP of the league, goes down. And because, how about this, Jim? Because Carson Wentz went down, that catapulted the opponent, the five-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady, into the driver's seat for league MVP. So not only might Tom Brady take the MVP away from Carson Wentz due to injury, he could take the Super Bowl championship away from the Carson Wentz team that has fought and persevered through all of the negativity, through all of the adversity that comes with Wentz's injury. A team that used its backup quarterback in taking apart the league's top-ranked defense in the NFC Championship game nearly 2 weeks ago. Absolutely demolished, dissected, pick your adjective here, or verb, beg your pardon, what they did to the Minnesota Vikings defense in the NFC Championship game. So Philadelphia really overcoming a lot to be here. If you're not rooting for them, then I just, like I said, you're either from New England, or maybe you married somebody from New England, or you're just, I don't know, on crack. There's no other way, really, for you to be smoking, for you to be rooting. Don't smoke crack and root for the Patriots. Stay sober, stay sober, and root for the Eagles is basically the way that it should go. Am I overstating that, Kush?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we kind of went over this, and it sounds logical on the surface. Unless you're, you know, a Boston type fan, why would you be rooting for the Patriots? Yeah, you need to acknowledge the greatness that is there, but in terms of what you would like to see on Sunday, unless you're actually truly a fan of them or from that area, why would you be rooting for them?
Yeah, no reason. None whatsoever. I mean, well, I'm about to step in it. I got to learn to lie. Yeah, I really do. I do. I you know, when we talk about these things, Kush, I am just hopelessly honest. And I say that not with, you know, any intended self-righteousness. But, I mean, like I said, I can't stand LeBron James, but when he's 33 and averaging 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists, I have to just bow down and say, my God, that is amazing, and I don't like him. I don't like, you know, a lot of guys and a lot of teams that I just respect. So there's part of this, Jim, that I'm going to have to step in this right now. While I said, unless you're on crack, you're rooting for the Eagles. The way you phrased it when you said, why would you? Why would anybody not root for the Eagles in this game unless you're from New England, which is kind of where I led you?
Yeah.
But the answer is that history part. If you're a history buff, and I'm a history buff, I mean, I would like to have been able to be alive and watch television or listen to radio, because it was very limited television, but listen to radio coverage in 1945. To the signing of the surrender by the Japanese on board that U.S. Aircraft carrier. I would love to have been, you know, around when so many historical things. I would love to have been alive and been able to see Muhammad Ali knock out Sonny Liston, the 21 or 22-year-old braggadocious mouth that roared from Louisville, Kentucky, Cassius Clay, knocking out Sonny Liston, who was just about as unbeatable, it was believed, as anybody in the history of the sport had ever been. I love history. I would love to have seen and been alive to a print. Now, I was alive, but I was a kid. In 1980, I was 13 when the Team USA beat the Russians. And while I was like, everybody else, yay, go USA, USA. I didn't appreciate the magnitude of it because I didn't understand what Russian professional hockey was.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were all professionals. It was their jobs. They played hockey for the government, essentially,
right,
for Russia. They were all pros. And then all the college kids, I didn't understand, you know, the impossibility of Mike Garuzioni and Jim Craig and all those guys getting together and practicing for a month and then taking on the world's greatest professionals.
And random FYI, we're going to have that again this year at the Winter Olympics, since the NHL players, I'm still bummed about this, will not be going.
That's true. So you are going to have that there. And that's a conversation for another day. But thank you for reminding me of that. But, you know, I appreciate it now because of its history. At the time, I would love to have seen it. You know what I mean? I mean, experience and understood it. Like I said, I was 13, so like everybody else, I was like, yay. I didn't understand what the Cold War was at 13. You know, I mean, we have President Reagan. They have President they didn't call him President Gorbachev. They called him, wasn't even Prime Minister, was it? Premier, the Soviet Premier.
Right. Yeah, I think that was the title they used in those days.
So, you know, I didn't get it then. I get it now. I wish I would have. My point to all of this is I was loving watching Tiger Woods march to catch Jack Nicklaus until about a decade ago when it suddenly stopped, when his personal life went to crap, his health went to crap, he had surgeries, knee surgeries, back surgeries, and all this other stuff, right? But I was loving, even though I love Jack Nicklaus, a Buckeye, I wanted to see history. And if Tiger would have won 15 and then 16 and then 17, can you imagine, Jim, how we would have, and it, you know, based on the path or the pace he was on, it would have been a few years ago now that, you know, playing every major to tie Jack, to tie number 18. It's, I don't know, it's what it's about. I would love to have been alive and understood and heard Bill Mazeroski's home run. You know, Bobby Thompson's home run, the shot heard around the world, just all of these things I love. So it's a long, drawn-out way of saying, if the Patriots win, while I will not be happy because I will have been rooting for the Eagles, I won't be devastated because I will be able to appreciate the history of the moment as Tom Brady collects his sixth ring, putting him too clear of everybody else who has ever played the game. And that's something to just marvel over. Terry Bradshaw has four Super Bowl championships as a starting quarterback. Joe Montana has three. Nobody else has what Tom Brady has now, and he's about to make him, you know, put another one on the other hand. That's just not something you can slough off. I'm not going to be throwing stuff at my TV if the Patriots win because my team or my underdog team didn't get it done. I'm going to be like, all right, let's just appreciate this. Jim, you're in your early 30s, right?
Mid-30s now.
When somebody says the name Vince Lombardi, does it mean much to you other than, oh, my God, great, great coach of the past? I mean, that's pretty much it, right? It's so far back. His greatness was in the 60s. You weren't even a gleam in daddy's eye in the 60s. You were gone. You were nowhere near it. So you learned Vince Lombardi from the history books, the unwritten history book, the so-called word of mouth, being a sports fan history thing, right?
Pretty much, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
When he won the first two Super Bowls back-to-back against the Chiefs and then the Raiders, and of course they named the Lombardi Trophy after him, I mean, it was living legend type stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I was born in the year they won the first one in 67.
Okay.
So I, of course, said, I'm like you. I learned it from the history of history. Now, I learned it a little bit before you did, so it wasn't so far back in the rearview mirror that I couldn't appreciate it, but I couldn't appreciate it the way you could when somebody was living it.
Right.
People who watched the Packers under Lombardi, and people who watched even the old Bears under Halas, and when people watched the Steelers of the 70s under Knoll, they may or may not have realized they were watching the best people who had ever done it. Who had ever done it. And in their minds, probably, whoever would do it. I mean, Steelers fans of the 1970s probably figured this is the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport, and no one can ever touch this. And maybe they're right, because they've got their four titles in a span of 6 years. The Dallas Cowboys of the 90s won three titles in that decade. And I don't remember exactly what the span was at.
4 years. Remember, they won two against Buffalo, then there was the Niners, then they beat the Steelers. Those were the Cowboys three.
So 3-4. Mm-hmm. So not quite as good as 4-6, I would say. But here comes Belichick and Brady doing things in a very different way. This will be six, not four, six in eight tries spread out over how many years? 18?
Yeah, 2001 would have been the first season of all this.
17 then. You know, this year, this being the 2017-18 season.
So, right.
So eight championship appearances in the bowl in 17 years and potentially winning six. Is six in 17 better or bigger or a more of a dynasty than four in six the way the Steelers had or the run that the Cowboys had or the run that the Niners had in the 80s? I would have to say that it is in part because of the fact that they in a decade, in almost two decades, when you say 17, 18 years, it's the same quarterback. You know, the Niners dynasty was broken up a little bit from the fact that it was the Montana Niners. Then it became the Steve Young Niners who won the next two, or, you know, the two that that he won.
Well, he only won the one. Montana won the other four.
Won three.
Or
Young
three,
won
sorry.
One. Correct. There you go. Thank you. But it kind of transferred over. It was like the end of one part of their dominant era, and it started, you know, another.
Okay, yeah.
This has been Tom Brady's from 17 years ago to now. Bill Belichick's from 17 years ago to now. Eight Super Bowl appearances in 17 years. Let's put it this way, Jim. That means they're going every other year.
Yep.
Every other year.
And I want
to
say,
the Super Bowl.
And even
think
just
about that for nearly two decades.
Yep.
That's dominance that you can't quantify.
And if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to triple check this, but I think whether they won or lost it, the Patriots have made it to at least the AFC Championship game every year this decade. I have to triple check that, but I think that's close.
I think you might be right. Well,
I'm looking it up now.
Yeah. For some reason, I think didn't the Ravens beat the Broncos to go a few years ago, or was that the divisional round?
Nope, you were right. That was 2010. 2010 was the divisional. Every year since, the Patriots have made at least the AFC Championship game.
Okay, think about that. That's dominance. I mean, so my point to all of this again, I know I'm really dragging it out, and I don't mean to, but I love history, and I love sports history as much as I love, you know, American and world history. 30 years, and like I said, you're in your mid-30s. 30 years from now, you're going to be an old man, and you're going to be trying to tell your grandkids or kids or whoever, or people on a radio show, or whatever the case might be, that you watched when it was live, when it was happening, Bill Belichick, the greatest who had ever done it. Grumpy ass, you know?
Yeah.
Not a nice guy, kind of a jerk, blah, 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 but the most amazing game planner, strategizer, football philosopher, tactician, motivator, disciplinarian, all of the things that have made him go to each AFC championship game this decade, as you pointed out, or since 2011, going to eight in 17 years Super Bowls, winning six potentially after Sunday. You'll be able to kind of explain that you watched the greatest ever do it. The way that I, in the 70s, watched Chuck Knoll and the Steelers, what I thought was the greatest ever do it. And Tom Brady, I mean, let's be honest, Jim. And maybe there's somebody right now who's three, who will go into college 15 years from now and have an unbelievable career and then go into the NFL and then spend 20 years winning more than Tom Brady Super Bowls. Maybe there's somebody now who will win seven Super Bowls at some time in his life, in his career as a starting quarterback. But I would go on a limb right now, and if I had to put all of the money I've ever earned in my life on the line, and I had to make this bet with a gun at my head, I would bet you we will never, ever, ever, ever in the history of the future history of the league see a quarterback start eight Super Bowls and win six. Now, I'm giving Brady the win on Sunday. That's not a given. I'm saying if that happens,
right,
that's why I can't just sit here and say, oh, God, Patriots win again. I was rooting for the Eagles. I will be rooting for the Eagles. But I will soak in the moment the fact that I just watched the greatest player in the history of the Super Bowl era win his sixth championship in his eighth appearance in the Super Bowl at age freaking 40, the year he won his fourth, would it be, or third, league MVP at age 40. And I will remember that. And years from now, younger kids, my grandkids, whatever, will be asking me how good was Brady, you know, the way we did and I did, you know, and I would ask, you know, my father, how good was Otto Graham in the 50s? Or how good was, how good was Jim Brown in the 60s? And how good was this or that or the other thing? I will be able to say I watched the greatest who ever did it do it for 20 years. And that's the path Brady is on. So if the Eagles don't win it and give us the feel-good story, then I will not be terribly upset by it because I will have had the historical story. The Patriots win, and the history that comes along with that, and I will be able to appreciate it and share that and pass that down throughout the years. Does that sound all too creepy?
No, not at all. It doesn't. I mean, you know, because I'm kind of the same way. Like I said, that kind of spurred you off into this, Bob. You know, I'm rooting for the Eagles just because I don't want to see it again. But if it happens again on Sunday, we'll have all the coverage starting at about 2:30 here on 106.5 The Ticket, or as soon as Ohio State basketball is done on Sunday, FYI, then yes, I will have to give the obligatory tips of the cap and recognition of the greatness.
Yeah, and like I said, people will ask you what it was like. People ask you now, you know, I've asked people, what it was like watching Ali fight in his prime, or ask, you know, what it was like watching Gale Sayers run for the Bears. Things that we'll never see, we'll never be able to appreciate. And this will
I think in a way
things, these will be some of the things that people ask us. What was it like with the Patriots? What
was it like with this with type of conversation and speculating going forward the way you're saying, we're in a different sport, we're sort of living that discussion already. For example, as you mentioned, I'm in my mid-30s. And as much as I couldn't stand him when he was playing, because of the things that he did to my team,
right,
it's why I find the NBA GOAT argument to be completely ludicrous. Because I saw Jordan. Someone who's 15, 16, 17, 18, they didn't.
Yeah, that's very true. And they're going to be relying upon people like us to say, how was it? How was he better than LeBron? How was he better than Durant? How was he better than Kobe? We experienced it and, like you said, hated it, but had to appreciate it and respect it. And that's exactly what
exactly.
I'm talking about. So, all right. Really just a fascinating issue here with the Super Bowl. I feel like I'm going to win no matter who wins. If Philly wins, love the story. Great for the franchise. It's a bite out of the Belichick legacy, in spite of it still already being, you know, cemented as the only coach to ever win 5 Super Bowls. It's a great story if Philly wins. If they don't win and New England wins, well, then the Grouch extraordinaire wins another one, and the history part of it takes over, and we are watching just remarkable things that we'll never see again. And I mean that very seriously. In the history of history to come, I don't think anybody will ever be able to do this in the span that these two guys in their organization have been able to do it. All right, we got a lot still to do. We're going to talk about the Philly side of that, the good story side of that. Like I said a few minutes ago, coming up, we're going to talk to Cody Benjamin of BleedingGreenNation.com. That's the Eagles SB Nation site, and he's not in Philly. He is up in Minnesota. So we'll kind of get the feel, the vibe from the Super Bowl city, as we are just a couple of days away now from kickoff. In fact, what are we, 51 hours.
Yeah, 6:30 is the kick on Sunday evening.
So we're about 51 hours away from the kickoff here. So we're going to get the perspective from somebody who is live in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. Then, by the way, a little bit less partisanship from Eagles or Patriots side at 4:10, Matt Urban, Lions writer for Lions Wire. How about that? A Lions writer for Lions Wire, which is part of USAtoday.com. We'll get his thoughts on the next head coach of the Lions, which, of course, is going to be Matt Patricia on Monday, come hook or by crook, once the season is over. And we'll kind of preview that a little bit and then, of course, talk with him about the Super Bowl from a nonpartisan perspective. So all of that coming up. And also Bill Clark in hour number 2 as well. He'll talk high school basketball with us headed into this weekend's games. But for now, Jim Cushlin, before we get to the bottom of the hour, local sports center, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day comes from Detroit, where Blake Griffin, the newest member of the Pistons, had himself a debut last night. Blake Griffin, 24 points and 10 rebounds as the Pistons beat Memphis 104-102. And in the process, Griffin becomes the first Pistons player in their Detroit debut to go for 20 and 10 since Grant Hill did it way back in 1994. But I've got a wild stat that's even wilder than the one Jim Cushland looked up. And it has to do with that 20 and 10. Blake Griffin, with that performance last night of 24 and 10, is now the sixth player in NBA history to score at least 20 and grab at least 10 boards in back-to-back games with two different teams. Meaning, obviously, the first game for a new team after a trade. It's the only way that could happen. And Bob, you're probably asking yourself right now, tell us, who are the other five? Well, I've got that for you as well. In 64-65, Wilt Chamberlain. 1979-80 season, Alex English. In 2003-2004, Sharif Abdur-Rahim had at least 20 and 10 in back-to-back games for different teams. In 2010-2011, it was Carmelo Anthony. And now add Blake Griffin's name as a Detroit, well, then as an LA Clipper, and now as a Detroit Piston in 2017-18, Blake Griffin, the sixth player ever to go 20 and 10 back-to-back games for two different teams. All right, as we get set, Jim Cushland, for the bottom of the hour local sports center, I want to warm up this frozen, frigid Northwest Ohio day by having you think about golf a little bit. I've got a pair of tickets in my hands right now. All right, I'm lying. It's not in my hands. It's in Cushland's hands, but you get the point. To the Toledo Golf Show, which is coming up at the Tam O'Shanter Exhibition Hall, February 16th through the 18th. And if you would like to go and experience the Toledo Golf Show, which is a fun time, and it is nice and warm in there, by the way, be caller number 5 right now for par 5. How does that sound? See if you can eagle it. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Caller 5 will give you tickets to the Toledo Golf Show. Bottom of the hour Sports Center next, and talking NFL Super Bowl style with Philadelphia Eagles writer Cody Benjamin coming up next right here on the ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, and right back to the Super Bowl discussion right here at 3:41 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo sports leader. Reminder, we're going to be nonpartisan coming up at about 4:10. When we talk to Matt Urban, who writes for Lions Wire, part of USAtoday.com, he is, of course, on the Lions from the Lions' perspective. He doesn't have a dog in this fight between Philadelphia and New England. But yesterday, we were partisan. We talked to a writer for the SB Nation Patriot site, PatsPulpit.com, to get his thoughts on the matchup. And now we go to the other side, the Rocky side of this Rocky versus Apollo punchers chance, if you will. That's a lot of people are referring to it. To Philadelphia. I want to say good afternoon to Cody Benjamin, who writes for BleedingGreenNation.com. That's the Philadelphia Eagles SB Nation site, but he also writes for CBS Sports. He is not in Philadelphia right now. He is up in the Great White North, or close to it, up in Minnesota for Super Bowl 52. Cody, thanks for joining us here in Toledo. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I just looked at the temperature gauge. It says 10 degrees, and that's actually an improvement over this morning. I think it was just hovering right above zero. So I'm inside, safe and sound for this interview. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, we appreciate you doing it. And, yeah, so, you know, that's the one thing. Let me ask you, have you been there all week, or how long ago did you get there?
Yeah, actually, I'm actually based in Minnesota now. Grew up in Philadelphia.
Oh, my mistake. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. So you're from Philly, though.
Right, right outside of Philadelphia, about an hour from there, and grew up in that area, Pennsylvania, and now I'm based in Minnesota. So it was convenient for me that the Super Bowl was out here. So I've been adjusted for a little while now to this kind of weather.
Well, that's good. Now, I was going to ask, though, like, you know, you obviously there are people who travel to cover the Super Bowl from all over, including down in the South and in the Western states where the weather is warm. And people don't like the idea of having, or at least a lot of people, don't like the idea of having the Super Bowl in a frozen weather city like New York they had a few years ago. And now Minnesota, they want to go to parties and they want to go to Bourbon Street, or they want to go out onto the beach when the games are in Florida or California, or they want to be out in the hot sun of Arizona. So have you noticed any kind of decrease in the excitement level, or how are people who are not used to the frigid weather like you are handling Super Bowl week, in the frozen tundra?
Well, I definitely think it's something's tempered a little bit. I don't know that it's the excitement, but obviously, you know, very different scene walking on the Miami beaches or being able to stroll, you know, the boardwalk at night. I mean, it's just a very different scene. But I do think it's a unique one, and I think people are still enjoying themselves. I mean, the whole, you know, making the Mall of America as kind of the hub of Super Bowl activity this week has been kind of a unique setting. And I think the players, you know, everyone is kind of stationed right there. You got the player hotels attached to the mall. You've got Radio Row essentially sitting in a food court. So it's it almost makes it more part of the community, because you've got people that are just walking the mall and eating food, and they're right next to Radio Row. And obviously some of them probably have no idea that this is actually going on. But, you know, for everyone else, it kind of immerses them right into the experience. And so, yeah, I think in the players, you know, obviously a team like the Eagles hasn't been here for a while. I think they've just kind of been soaking in the moment. So excitement's still there. It's just kind of bottled up to stay warm.
Let me ask you this. Would you like it if it was, 25 degrees out and snowing and sleeting and everything else in an open-air stadium in the north? Is it okay, in your opinion? It's hypothetical, of course, but to play the game in that kind of weather, or do we need dome-type temperatures and atmosphere and perfect weather to make sure that both teams are at their optimum capabilities?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's probably a few people that would be, you know, really embrace this. You know, their whole slogan out here for the Super Bowl season has been Bold North. And I'm sure there'd be, a handful of people that would say, well, let's really get bold and make them play in that weather. But I think the majority of people would say, for the sake of the football game and for the sake of, you know, the feeling in their fingertips, I think they'd probably just take the dome. And obviously it's a beautiful structure that they've built in the Twin Cities with the U.S. Bank Stadium. I think the players are going to enjoy it. And, I don't think anyone's turning away from that. Although, you know, you got, you know, just across the state, I mean, in Wisconsin, obviously Lambeau Field, they're known for being that, you know, it's a embrace the frozen atmosphere, I guess. But no, I think the U.S. Bank Stadium is a great addition here, and I think the hometown team and fans are loving it.
I was joking a little bit earlier on, Cody, that there's nobody really out of geographical New England in the country who's going to be rooting for the Patriots in this game. Everybody is going to be rooting for the Eagles, but I'm rethinking that now simply because you tell me you now are based in Minnesota. I thought, oh, yeah. What about Minnesota? What about the folks there? Is there enough disappointment / frustration, embarrassment, enmity for the Eagles because of the way they got trounced in the NFC Championship game that anybody in Minnesota would actually be pulling for the Patriots? Or does their loyalty stay with their NFC conqueror in the Philadelphia Eagles?
No, you hit the nail on the head. I'm glad you brought this up because they're absolutely, I mean, even from just, you know, the few days this week at the Mall of America, small sample size there, but I would say there's absolutely a contingent of people in Minnesota who are rooting for the Patriots. I mean, a couple of the Philadelphia beat reporters that were out here got some attention. They were tweeting pictures of this Vikings fan who had kind of was taking pride this week and walking around with a shirt on that said, he became a Patriots fan just because of this Eagle stuff. But a lot of it, the reason I'm glad you brought it up is because a lot of this stems not necessarily from the Eagles' performance against the Vikings, but the Eagles' fans' behavior during that game. And it was interesting, you know, on the opening night, on Monday night, they had the big media festivities with the players being introduced and the media coming out. And fans could buy tickets for this. And I'd say a majority of those fans in there were from Minnesota. They were Vikings fans. They had the loudest cheers. But as soon as the Eagles players took the stage, I mean, the chorus of boos was something out of, you know, a Philadelphia story. And, you know, I'm thinking in my head that these players, you know, I think a lot of them were booing because of the fans. And we know that Vikings fans didn't have the best experience in Philadelphia. Every fan base has its bad factions of people, but I think that a lot of the boos are coming from they just don't want these Philadelphia fans to be celebrating in the streets of Minnesota after Sunday's game. So you know.
That's a really interesting perspective, and I'm glad I asked the question, because that's – so there really are two areas then, Minnesota pretty much and New England, and that's just about it. Everybody else is going to be pulling for Philly, and that's a really good reason, by the way, you know, based on how – you know, some of the fans felt treated by Eagles fans. So let's get to the game now. Let's get onto the field here and talk about the obvious. I kind of mentioned it, and I've been telling everybody this. This is how I see it, and it's I'll blame it again, as I will when I talk about it next hour, on Sylvester Stallone, who's tweeting pictures of himself or Instagramming pictures of himself in Eagles jerseys, talking about how this is just like Rocky, going to rise up, you know, the team that has never been there before, like Rocky had never been there before, against Apollo Creed, who lives in the ring during championship fights. That's Tom Brady. And Stallone has really got me being a believer here that this is just like the movies. Is it just a puncher's chance, in your opinion, Cody, for the Eagles to take down the team that lives inside that championship ring? This is their eighth appearance, Tom Brady's eighth start, three more than any other quarterback has ever had in the Super Bowl. And he, of course, has won five. Is this, you know, kind of like that that underdog David Goliath type feel for you as well?
Well, you know, it's funny, the Rocky stuff has gotten a lot of attention, and it deserves it. But I think everyone's got to remember, especially if you're coming from an Eagles fan's perspective, you better hope he's talking about the sequel, because in the first Rocky movie, Rocky doesn't actually win the fight. So that's something that needs to be pointed out, I think, so people don't forget that. But I don't think it's, you know, I think the Eagles have reason to be confident in this game. Obviously, the story starts and ends with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and whenever those names are involved, I mean, it's never a given. But New England's defense is, you know, it can be beaten, and they didn't play great offenses in the playoffs. Before the playoffs, their defense poorly ranked. And the Eagles, obviously, if they look anything like they did against the Vikings in the NFC Championship, they're going to be able to make some plays. Obviously, it's a lot of pressure on Nick Foles, but Doug Peterson, I think, deserves even more credit than he's getting. I mean, the fact that he's even in the Super Bowl going up against Bill Belichick, and you know, majority of Eagles fans, I'd say, are pretty confident that he's going to be able to scheme up a game plan for this. I mean, that itself speaks volumes, and I think he's done a phenomenal job, obviously, with the resiliency of that locker room and the roster. And it's not going to be easy, but I certainly think Philadelphia is going to be in this game.
We're talking with Cody Benjamin, who writes for the Philadelphia Eagles SB Nation site. It's bleedinggreennation.com. He is also a writer for CBS Sports. He's in Minnesota. I want to follow up on that game plan that you think Peterson is going to be able to scratch together to beat the likes of Bill Belichick. But first, Jim Cushion's got a question for you, Jim.
You know, and in the more broad sense, you know, one thing I brought up, maybe not this past week, but probably the week before, because, you know, as we all know, between, you know, title games and Super Bowl, there's always 2 weeks now, was that I do find it very, very funny on a certain level that here we are with an Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl with Belichick and Brady, and we've already had that one before, except back in the other one for Philly, it was Andy Reid. You had Terrell Owens on that team, and, of course, Donovan McNabb. What is the main difference, since they're going up against virtually the same type of opponent, same QB, same head coach, even though the rest of the players are basically different? What is the difference from a Philadelphia perspective between that Eagles team that played the Patriots and this one?
Well, it's a great question. I think, first of all, the circumstances and the expectations surrounding those teams are vastly different. I mean, when McNabb and Reed finally got to that Super Bowl, they had been on the precipice of the Super Bowl for years before that. So it was almost, there was an air of desperation a little bit more, that we finally have to get over this hump in Philadelphia. And that was a team that had been showing for several years. I mean, that was, they had three NFC championship appearances in that span right before that. And so, obviously the circumstances, there were already expectations for that team to be Super Bowl caliber. As opposed to this year,
stars,
where the Eagles,
too, right? If I may, Cody, they had team at stars. Donovan McNabb was a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Oh, sure.
Terrell Owens was a Pro Bowl, if not all pro wide receiver. So that team had stars much more than a team like this, particularly now that, you know, Nick Foles is in the driver's seat instead of Carson Wentz. That's the big difference, or a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had nine Pro Bowlers, I think, that year.
Wow.
I think on, you know, on the front lines, those, just looking at the depth chart, the starting lineup, there was way more star-studded talent that stood. I mean, you go on the defensive side of the ball, Brian Dawkins, Jeremiah Trotter, Javon Kearse was still there, Lito Shepard. I mean, there were big names all across the board. But the big thing now is there's way more depth on this 2017 team, and I think that that has been proven by just the way that when the stars have fallen off, you know, your Carson Wentz, Jason Peters, Jordan Hicks, the guys have gone down, and yet the team has not gone down. So the depth of this team is far stronger, I think. And then just going back to that expectations thing, I mean, even if Carson Wentz stayed healthy, I think a lot of people thought Eagles would have been a year ahead of schedule to make it to the Super Bowl this year. So the expectations are kind of, you know, they've gone up and down pretty wildly this season. And, yeah, it just as a team, the sum has been greater than, I just think when you look at the injuries and everything that they went through this year, the depth has been tested and it's come through.
We are talking Super Bowl 52 with our partisan coverage today, meaning yesterday we talked with a Patriots writer. Today it's Cody Benjamin, who writes for BleedingGreenNation.com, Philly's SB Nation site, as well as CBS Sports. Do you think that the Gronkowski announcement, well, are you surprised at all? I kind of expected Gronk would be better and out of the protocol after, you know, since they had the two-week break. How much of a factor do you think this is? And before you answer it, I want you to think about it, and not to tell your business at all, Cody, but I get the feeling, and you can tell me if you agree or not, that it doesn't matter. As strange as it is for the best tight end in the league to be there or not being there, it doesn't matter because of the, quote, Patriot way. He was supposed to matter not being there last year, and all Tom Brady did was not use Rob Gronkowski to come back from down 28-3. It almost feels like if he's there, that sucks, but if he isn't there, it doesn't, if you're rooting for Philly, that is. But if he isn't there, it doesn't matter because Brady's going to find somebody else to beat you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his presence, you know, if he's playing, you have to zero in on him as part of the game plan. But if he's not there, yeah, I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that if Rob Gronkowski's not in the lineup, that somehow Belichick and Brady aren't going to find a way to put up a fight. I mean, I think that's just, that would be overlooking the abilities of that Patriots staff. But, you know, now that he is in there, I think it's going to be key for, I would be shocked if it wasn't Malcolm Jenkins who comes down to try and cover him most of the time. The Eagles have two other safeties who are more than capable of playing that center field role in Rodney McLeod and Corey Graham. So, you know, bring Malcolm Jenkins down. I think another X factor outside of Gronkowski is probably that screen game of the Patriots. I mean, how well are they going to utilize that, you know, that group of running backs? Because Bill Belichick, you know, uses all kinds of different running backs in all kinds of different ways. So, should be a big key for the Eagles defense to try and slow that down.
No question about it. So you mentioned, you know, that you think Peterson can devise a scheme, can figure out a way to counter Bill Belichick. Of course, that's very hard to do given who we're talking about here. What does he do offensively to attack this New England defense, which is not one of the league's best the way Minnesota's was? Nick Foles just put on a clinic against, you know, maybe the league's best defense against Minnesota. New England's isn't that. But yet here they sit in the Super Bowl because, and Jim Cushlin, I think, refers to it as a bend, don't break, you know, the old cliche. They give up a lot of yards, but they don't give up a ton of points. So what kind of an offensive game plan does Peterson, do you think, put in play here against this New England D?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, a lot of it has come down to how Nick Foles has performed. I mean, it's odd, too, because you go back and look at his performance against the Raiders in the regular season. Oakland had a very poor defense, and Nick Foles struggled, you know, pretty mightily in that game. And then he goes out against the number one ranked defense in the championship game, and, you know, you could have mistaken him for Carson Wentz in that game. And so I think some of that can be attributed to the fact he didn't have a whole lot of time yet to practice with the first team. But obviously just from a game planning perspective, I mean, I would think it falls somewhere in between what the Eagles did against the Falcons and the Vikings. Against Atlanta, a little more conservative, rely on the ground game, set up the screen game with Jay Ajayi. Against the Vikings, it was more let it rip, you know, let Nick Foles take some shots deep. And I think that they'll have a chance to do that against New England. I mean, like you said, bend but don't break. Now, maybe that means a deep ball, not necessarily a touchdown on the deep pass, but I think there's going to be some room to make some plays. And you know, offensive play caller wise, I think Doug Peterson has really been, you know, you look back over the regular season, the game that they went up against the Broncos, you know, at that point, Denver's defense was still pretty highly regarded, and he out-schemed them to the tune of, I think it was 51 points. So Doug Peterson's been on his game a lot of the season. I think he'll, you know, have to get creative against Bill Belichick.
Yeah, but that's a very interesting perspective. I had not really realized that he has done his best seemingly against some of the best defenses. So it's a really interesting thing. Last thing before you go, give us a score. We always ask our guests for a final score prediction, putting aside your Eagles fandom, if you will, and just kind of putting on your prognosticator's cap. Who wins?
You know, that's the question everyone wants to answer. And I think, to be honest, 100% honest, I mean, putting on a prognosticator cap and taking off any fandom, it's really a toss-up, and I don't know how it is. I mean, Eagles obviously underdogs here. You never want to bet against Brady and Belichick. But this also feels like, you know, if ever there was a time for the Patriots dynasty to, I guess, take a step back or head towards that closing, I mean, why not against the Eagles, against this team that really, everyone's bet against them throughout the playoffs, and they've continued to outperform those expectations. I think their defense has the ability to get after the quarterback. I think they could get pressure on Tom Brady. I don't think that they're going to blow out the Patriots. But, you know, for Bleeding Green Nation, and obviously, you know, maybe they would have told me I'm not going to be writing for them anymore if I didn't pick the Eagles. But I took the Eagles there 29-27. And to be honest, I mean, it's really, you know, expect the unexpected is kind of the motto for Super Bowls.
No, I think that's as fair and objective as analysis anybody really could give, even, you know, given the fact that you write for the Philly website. Cody Benjamin from SB Nation Philadelphia website, bleedinggreennation.com. Cody, thanks for the time. I certainly appreciate it. Great conversation, and enjoy the game.
Yep, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Thanks very much. Hey, congratulations to Bill Day of Adrian, Michigan, won the golf show tickets. Guess what? I've got more. How about caller number, let's make it a par four this time, Kush. Par four. Caller number 4-866-240-1065. If you would like to, go to the Toledo Golf Show February 16th through the 18th at the Tam O'Shanter Exhibition Hall. Those tickets are waiting for you. On the other side of the Sports Center now, Matt Urban, Lions Wire, USAToday.com. We'll talk about Matt Patricia and the Lions waiting for their coach to be done with this season, which will happen on Sunday one way or the other. We'll get his thoughts on the Lions and get his thoughts on the Super Bowl, his predictions from a nonpartisan perspective as well. And don't forget also next hour, Bill Clark, high school basketball extraordinaire. He's going to be joining us coming up at about 4:45 to preview the weekend's action. All of that still to come right here on The Ticket.
Up the three, and it's through. 6'11", 245. Driving Blake Griffin to the rim for another deuce, 20 for Blake.
I wanted to just come out and play hard, you know, being very limited in my knowledge of our offense. Coach Van Gundy did a great job of, like, just putting in five things that we could go to, and we ran them to death. They worked, you know, and everybody just played hard. The fans here, just for the Pistons and sports in general, are incredible. You could feel the energy tonight, and that was a big boost for us, a big boost for me. We got some guys that can really play. Came up with big stops when we needed them. Playing with Andre was a blast. We just got to come in and play. We'll figure it out. Our chemistry will get better and better.
I think that just sort of scratched the surface. I really do. 24-10, 5 assists. I mean, I don't know if the numbers will always be that, but I didn't really have a very good framework in for him to work out of. He was just having to sort of create stuff on his own. So I think maybe we can help him a little bit more than we did tonight.
I've enjoyed every moment. There's a reason I came back to Philly, just to be a part of the team, be a part of the environment. Be a backup quarterback in this situation, to step, you know, be in this situation. It just says a lot about this team and how everyone has helped, you know, all the guys who've gotten injured have been there every step of the way to help the guys that are in front of them. Carson has helped me tremendously. But it's a great honor to be a part of this team, to be in this situation. It's a great responsibility, and, you know, we still have a lot of work left this week to, you know, prepare for this game. But I'm excited for what's ahead. Grateful to be in the Super Bowl with these guys, and obviously Tom Brady, one of the greatest to play the game. I'm excited to compete against the Patriots come Super Bowl Sunday. They've had a great team for a long time, and, you know, I'm excited to go in there with my team to, you know, go face them.
Your preparation is to the nth degree. You've got to study every situation and understand how they're gonna attack you and how we can attack them. But you got to play for 60 minutes. You got to play a full ball game against these guys.
He's a dynamic player. Needs a ton to our offense. You know, he really has since he got to our team. It's always great when he's out there. We'll have to find different ways to get other people the ball if he's not. You know, obviously we're all hoping he's, you know, as healthy as he can be, ready to go. I've played with him for a long time. I've thrown him a lot of footballs. He knows exactly what to do. He knows where to expect the ball, when to expect it. You know, he's just a tremendous player for our team.
Obviously, with New England, it all starts with Brady. I mean, he's, you know, he's the ultimate fixer. I mean, he can overcome a lot of holes. He can overcome a lot of problems, a lot of mistakes throughout the course of the game. There's just not been many guys like him. And with the way Belichick gets them ready to play, and then you sprinkle in the talent he has around him on both sides of the ball, it's hard to pick against them. And we saw it last week. Everyone thought they were dead to rights against Jacksonville. And, you know, if he's close enough, he's within striking distance there at the end. You know, it's hard to go against them.
This is the Bob Franz Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway now, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. And as promised, we want to go Super Bowl heavy in this half hour or so of the show. We are going to talk a little high school basketball coming up with Bill Clark at about 4:40, 4:45, somewhere in that neighborhood, as it is Friday night heading into basketball weekend. But so many eyes are on Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's the Eagles looking for their first ever franchise world championship in the Super Bowl era. And, of course, Tom Brady looking for his, I don't know, 19th or something. So joining us now to talk all things NFL, including that Super Bowl, but also maybe a little bit about the expected announcement of the new Lions head coach as early as Monday after the game is completed on Sunday, Matt Patricia. So we've asked Matt Urban to join us. He's a contributor for Lions Wire at USA Today. He joins us now here in Toledo on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Matt, how are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Bob.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks very much. Jim Cushlin is here as well. He'll chime in whenever he feels the time is right. And so, Matt, let's actually do Lion stuff first, because I think this is, you know, certainly more pressing to our listeners, but I know there's a lot more ground to cover on the Super Bowl than there is this, and so I don't want to give it short shrift at the end of the conversation. What is your original or initial take on Matt Patricia? Obviously, they kind of had this verbal agreement or this, you know, this decision made a long time ago, and they just can't make it official until the Super Bowl is over. But were you part of Team Patricia right from the get-go? Did you think this is the right guy to turn the Lions, well, not turn them around, but to take them where they want to be?
You know, actually I was. Even when they were considering not bringing back Caldwell last year, I always thought Patricia was the next logical candidate. You know, he's got familiarity with Quinn. You know, he's the guy that knows both sides of the ball. I think he was the top candidate this year, really, if you ask people around the league. So, yeah, I definitely am on board with Patricia hiring.
What is it about him, other than being familiar with Bob Quinn and vice versa, which, you know, certainly is a helpful thing? You know, Bob Quinn tried it with Jim Caldwell one time. He could have made this move or could have made a move going into this past season, obviously, but he wanted to give him a shot, and now he wants to, you know, grab onto somebody that he likes and he is familiar and comfortable with. But from, you know, is it X's and O's? Is it motivational? Is it just the fact that he coached under Belichick? What is it that has you, you know, thinking this is the right hire?
You know, it's a little bit of all of it. He's a really smart guy, first of all. He's like from an aeronautical engineer, I believe. But what I really like is, you know, he came on board, I think, in 2004 as an assistant offensive line coach, and then he switched over a couple years later, eventually taking over as offensive coordinator in, I think, 2012. So, you know, he's familiar with both sides of the ball, and obviously the Lions have had a little bit of trouble with their offensive line the past 2 years or so. So, you know, I think that fits well. He's a detail-oriented guy. He's an no-BS kind of guy. Mostly, though, what I've read about him is that he's really good at adjusting. And, you know, that's something that the Lions have, you know, fans have been complaining about for years here. And so, yeah, they might come out in the first half and give up some yards and points, but by the second half, he seems to figure people out. And then, as you saw in the past two playoff games, he's really kind of just shut the door in the second half. So that's what I like about Patricia so far. Obviously, still a risk, though. You know, Jim Caldwell, he won two back-to-back winning seasons. So anytime you replace a guy like that, there's going to be pretty high expectations. So it's not, you know, there's definitely some risk, but I like Patricia so far, what I've read.
You know, since you kind of laid, I'm going to come back to some of what you said in a moment, But just since you brought up, you know, replacing Jim Caldwell, who's had back-to-back winning seasons, the bar should be kind of high. I think you're right, but it's not because of the back-to-back seasons were so good. If they were so good, winning seasons, I mean, it was so good, they would have kept him. It's the fact
that he
couldn't take them to, you know, where they want to be.
Excellent.
I mean, when Caldwell took over, as you know, 4 years ago, obviously from covering this team, it was a wreck, and he gave it stability, and he built it to something that is competitive on a regular weekly and annual basis. But is the expectation of Bob Quinn and the Ford family going to be you need to get into the playoffs? That's the one place that Caldwell couldn't get us and get us a win. He got there 2 times out of 4, but get us a win. Is the expectation, is the bar's got to be much higher than just a winning season. Otherwise, they could have just kept Caldwell.
Right, yeah, I agree. And I think that's the risk. You know, I expect them to be better, and I think Bob Quinn would not have made this move if he didn't think, you know, Patricia would be an upgrade over Caldwell, even as a first-year head coach. And, you know, a big thing that he made a point about when he fired Caldwell was just, you know, Caldwell's a good coach, but he didn't come out big in big games. He didn't beat the good teams when he needed to.
That's
right. And that was especially true this year. So, yeah, I mean, I look at it like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, if you look at the schedule this year, I mean, all of the W's are next to losing record teams, and all of the L's are next teams that are playoff teams or close to playoff teams. So there's no question about that. I want to go back to just real quick, because I know Jim's got a question for you, but and we're talking to Matt Urban, a contributor to Lions Wire at usatoday.com. I want to go back to the Belichick influence. How much of an influence do you think Bill Belichick will be on Patricia and his coaching style and his success? And as you answer that, consider the fact that the Bill Belichick coaching tree hasn't exactly, you know, produced a whole lot of very strong branches with the likes of Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss, Josh McDaniel the first time around. You know, so many of his guys have gone on and had, I don't know, maybe Bill O'Brien might be the most successful head coach, and that's not saying a ton of guys who have worked. Mangini's another one who had a couple of chances and never did it.
Right.
So you understand the question. It's just really a, you know, everybody thinks, well, if you coached under Bill Belichick, you know how to do it right, but that hasn't been the case for so many guys.
Right. I mean, that's the big question, obviously. I mean, you obviously hope that he's taken as much as possible from Belichick, and everything I've read is that, you know, Belichick, he's always kind of been the guy, the de facto defensive coordinator, even when they had defensive coordinators like Crennel and stuff. But over the past couple of years, he's really trusted Patricia to run the defense, and that's not that's new for what Belichick's been doing. But, you know, you never really know with a guy like Belichick. He's so – he's the greatest. I mean, everyone that comes from that tree, they have strengths, they have weaknesses, but, you know, are they going to be Belichick? Probably not, but – you have to hope that he learned as much as he could from Belichick and just go from there. I mean, you got to take a risk at some point.
Yeah, you're right. You do. And eventually there's going to be coaches who come for Bill Belichick who do, you know, who are successful. Maybe it's the second time through with a guy like McDaniels, and we'll find out about that, obviously, from Indy. But Jim Cushman, you've got a question for Matt. Go ahead.
Indeed. On this subject, we've heard some of the stories on. I'm sure we'll find out more Monday or early next week or whenever this goes down. But what is the status of some of the assistant coaches? From my understanding and reading, Jim Bob Cooter will be coming back, for example. But what are you hearing in terms of the status of some of the assistant coaches on the staff?
I think most have been informed if they're going to be staying or not. I know, obviously, Tyrell Austin is now with the Bengals, and they said, I don't think it's official that Cooter's coming back, but I think Golden Tate went on NFL Network and said that he probably is, so you got to assume that he probably is then. Other than that, I mean, I think he'll probably want to meet with other people before he makes all those decisions, but I think he's going to want to do his own way. I'm a little bit surprised that he is going to keep Cooter. I'm not against it, but I thought that he'd probably want to bring in his own guy. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, I'm not too familiar with what he plans to do going forward once he's named head coach on Monday or Tuesday, whenever it is. But, yeah, it sounds like he's keeping Cooter. Austin's gone. I think Stafford's quarterback coach is also gone. Yeah, other than that, I'm not really too sure yet.
Do you think that keeping Cooter is in deference to Stafford, who made some statements in defense of, well, he made some statements in defense of Caldwell, too, and the club said, too bad. But, you know, he obviously has a good relationship with Cooter. Is that Patricia just trying to kind of placate his franchise QB?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I don't think that's wrong, either. I mean, look at Stafford. His past 4 years, he's had the four lowest interception totals he's ever had. His quarterback rating has been the highest it's ever been. But at the same time, you know, the offense, the run game has just been awful. And that's something that Bob Quinn said he wanted to, you know, wanted to fix, as he should. And, you know, is Cooter the guy to do that? Is it his fault that they didn't run the ball too well the past couple of years? I'm not entirely sure. You know, it's, he doesn't have any favor, personnel or anything. So I think he's just made the best with what he's done. Stafford likes him. I think it's just kind of a see how it goes the first year, and if it doesn't, probably move on in a different direction.
We're talking NFL football with Matt Urban, who writes for Lions Wire, contributor Lions Wire, part of USA Today. And obviously Super Bowl Sunday is just 2 days away. Let's get into it now a little bit. You know, I kind of make the and it's really Sylvester Stallone's fault because he's all over Instagram and Twitter and Facebook with pictures of himself wearing Philadelphia Eagles jerseys. Obviously, Philly is his adopted hometown. And he's always making these comparisons to Rocky. And there is such a really easy comparison to make there. You know, the champion of all champions, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, that's Apollo Creed. The Philadelphia upstarts who have never won one in their life, never had an opportunity quite like this, playing, talk about underdog, playing with a backup quarterback as opposed to their,
right,
you know, their starter and potential MVP candidate. The whole thing looks like a Rocky movie. How much of a chance do you give the underdog here, you know, considering they're fighting Apollo Creed, who's been in all of these battles? Tom Brady has pointed out how he knows how to prepare for these games. This is his eighth, for God's sake. And he knows what to expect, and he never panics. That's something nobody on the Eagles can really, you know, make the case that they have.
Right, and yeah, I think you're right. It definitely is, you know, a David and Goliath-type situation. But when you look at the numbers here, it doesn't seem that way. Because, you know, the Patriots, they give up, I think, near the bottom in terms of pass yards allowed per game. They're pretty good in terms of points allowed, but yeah, they're really a bend but don't break type of defense. Mm-hmm. And while the Philadelphia, they're fourth in points allowed, fourth in yards allowed. So, you know, they're an underdog only because of the perception, I think. But in terms of their team, their talent, you know, they are a really good team. So I think they got a really great chance here. I like the Patriots, obviously, just because of all the things he said. And right, obviously Tom Brady over Nick Foles. But, yeah, I mean, they're no slouch. I mean, that's the narrative going, but if you really look at the numbers here, they are a good team. I mean, for them to lose Carson Wentz, who was an MVP candidate, probably favorite, you know, and to really not miss a beat here being the Super Bowl, and what they did to the Vikings defense, I mean, they definitely have a real shot, I think.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. They are a good team. The Rocky reference is just more due to, in my opinion, obviously it's Philadelphia, and you know, the Patriots are this unbeatable kind of king in the Super Bowl. Even though they did lose twice to the Giants, for crying out loud, they're sitting at 5-2 in Super Bowls going into this thing. And,
right,
and you know, what Tom Brady did in the second half, the adjustments that he and McDaniels and Belichick made in the second half in that game, particularly in the fourth quarter against Jacksonville, who is, of course, one of the top two or three defenses in the league, right up there with Minnesota's, right up there with Philadelphia's. It just kind of, and they did that without Rob Gronkowski, who was knocked out earlier.
Right.
It just kind of gives the feeling of inevitability. Philadelphia could play perfect football for three quarters, like last year when Atlanta had a 28-3 lead. You know, they could play perfect, but there's almost a feeling of inevitability that sooner or later Tom Brady's going to get you. And even if oftentimes it is later, but it's just there's nothing you can do about it. Play as well as you want, but eventually he's going to get you.
Right, yeah, and they just find a way. It's like you said, I mean, you know, their defense isn't great, but, you know, they keep it close, they make adjustments, and they come out in the second half, and it's like they know what you're going to do. Obviously, there's conspiracy theorists that think that they cheat, all that kind of stuff, but, you know, they really do seem like they just figure it out. In the fourth quarter, they just lock you down, they take care of business, and they get it done. I mean, that's probably from belief of being in, you know, seven, this is their eighth Super Bowl, like you said. I mean, that obviously breeds confidence, but, yeah, it's just kind of like this just mentality that they all have, next man up. You know, they don't have Gronkowski, Edelman, you know, what's his name, Danny Amendola can come through and, you know, play great. So that's just how they do things over there. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, though.
Yeah, well, it is interesting, you know, how they can. You mentioned Amendola. That was the first thing that jumped out at me after the conference championship game. You know, Brady never has, you know, Julio Jones or Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham or the greatest receivers
right,
in the world. And he did have Randy Moss for a short period. But he takes guys like Danny Amendola, who are like third receivers, possession receivers in any other place, and makes them a star. And Danny Amendola came up with those two touchdown catches. And that is what has got to be the most, you know, nerve-wracking thing if you're if you're Doug Peterson and if you're an Eagles team trying to figure out who to stop, if you can key on the best guy, let's say you try to take Belichick's best guy, Gronkowski, out of the play or out of the game, or maybe you try to take away, I don't know, I'm trying to think, Amendola, then suddenly Chris Hogan or somebody is going to become a star, and he's going to catch 3 touchdown passes. You just can't focus on any one guy because they're so good at making ordinary players good and good players great.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And that's part of Brady, too. You know, these guys, these routes they run, they're always, you know, if they see a certain coverage, the receivers know they got to switch their route. And, you know, a lot of teams have systems like that. The Patriots, they practice, you know, over and over again, all these situational football type things. And, you know, so they, when they lose their top two guys or whatever, you know, the guys that come in there, they're ready. They've been in that system. They know what to expect. Tom Brady, you know, he gets the most out of those guys, and they just keep doing it. It doesn't matter if who they lose, it seems like. Obviously, if they lost Brady, it'd be a different story. But as long as they have him and they have Bill Belichick, it's hard to figure them out.
No question about it. We're talking to Matt Urban, who writes for Lions Wire, part of USA Today. Jim Kushlin is here as well. Jim, go ahead.
And talk to me about the Philadelphia defense and what they're going to have to do in this game, Matt. I was just looking over, and statistically, they're one of the better defenses in the NFL this year. To sum up kind of what I'm trying to say is, counting the two playoff games, 6 of their last 9 games, they've allowed 10 points or less. So talk to me about what Philadelphia's defense is going to have to do in this one to try to slow this down and keep it close.
Well, I think what they're going to have to do is very similar to what the Giants did in both their wins over the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And that was, you know, just getting pressure with that front four, which is, you know, Jim Schwartz was here in Detroit. That's his specialty. You know, he loves to rush four. And Brady, you know, when you do get in his face, he does get a little bit uncomfortable. He has to move around a little bit. He's great at it, but, you know, he can be beat if you really get in his face all day. And I think Philadelphia does have the pieces to do that. But, you know, the thing I think that, you know, gives the Patriots also an advantage is that they are 17th against the pass, which is drastically worse. And, you know, the Patriots are the number one ranked passing team. So there is some areas they can exploit. But overall, I think if they do get in their face, Philadelphia's defense gets in Brady's face, you know, that is their best way to stop them.
Let's talk about the other way around. You know, Nick Foles isn't supposed to be a threat. He's not supposed to be. He certainly wasn't supposed to do what he did to the Minnesota Vikings top-ranked defense in the NFC Championship game, and yet he did, and they did. This was never a one-man
right.
team. A lot of people felt like when Carson Wentz went down, that was the end of their chances. Nick Foles has proven to be one of the more effective backup quarterbacks all across football. Even though he had a couple of chances to start, that didn't really work out. But to start on short notice and be what he is, he's been one of the best in the last several years. Do you think that his lack of experience in the big game, in the moment, and it certainly didn't hurt him in the NFC Championship game, but the Super Bowl is a different animal. It can humble
sure.
even the most confident of guys. How do you think a career backup like this holds up to that pressure?
You know, it is a bigger stage, but just how he dominated the Vikings defense, which we talked about last time, was I thought they were probably the best in the league overall. And so I think he can play well. Like, you look at his, how he's done so far. He's got 122 quarterback rating in the 2 playoff games he's played. And, you know, he's a guy that does have a 27 touchdown, 2 interception season from a couple years back. And he's not like he's the journeyman people try to portray him as. You know, he's been around a couple teams, but he's had some success when he's been out there. It's not like he's a typical backup quarterback, you know. So I don't think the moment will be too big for him, but he's obviously not Tom Brady, so that's obviously the disadvantage. But I like Foles. I think he's really getting more confident the more he's out there. And Doug Peterson is actually the guy that initially scouted him when Chip Kelly was there. So he's pretty familiar with Foles, what his strengths and weaknesses are. So I think he'll be prepared to go into that game and play well. I just think it's going to be in the fourth quarter he's going to have to make plays, which Blake Bortles wasn't able to do, you know.
Let me ask you this. Tying the two topics that we're talking about here together, if Matt Patricia can't stop Nick Foles and design a defense that wins this championship game and particularly, you know, does a great job of limiting Nick Foles in Philadelphia, I just wonder if it takes any of the excitement out of the room or out of the, you know, air out of the balloon, whatever you want to say for Lions fans. You know, if he comes off a Super Bowl championship, back-to-back Super Bowl championships, you know, everybody's feeling really, really excited about that. If they
yeah.
lose this one, and especially if the defense doesn't do its job, does this reflect on Matt, or do you think in the minds of Lions fans, will it reflect on Matt Patricia?
I think for some it will, you know, but I look at it like, you know, Minnesota, they still feel pretty good about their defense, even though Philly just put up, you know, Nick Foles put up like, what, 33 on them or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I think it'll take a little bit of away from it, but you got to look at their personnel. You know, the Patriots don't have an elite personnel on their defense. I think they're good, and Patricia gets the most out of those guys, but they give up a lot of yards. You know, they're not a great defense. They're just really good at adjusting they're just really good at adjusting, you know, and I think that's really his strength. So if he comes out, and I kind of expect the Eagles to play a little bit better early, and then in the second half, I think Patricia should be able to figure him out. And if they don't, you know, it's not the end of the world. Philly's a good team this year, so it'll take away from some fans' perspective of, you know, just a little bit of luster of coming from another Super Bowl, but, you know, for me it wouldn't.
Yeah, well, and I would hope that wouldn't be the case. Certainly, you know, one game shouldn't you know, affect somebody's judgment of somebody's ability to be a head coach, especially since he is the coordinator. He's not out there actually making the plays. But, you know, you just kind of wonder, everybody has been waiting. Everybody's excited. A lot of head coaches have been hired. Cities have been, you know, introducing, franchise have been introducing their new coaches. And everybody's waiting. And it would be so awesome if he walked to the podium being introduced as the new or, you know, two-time defending defensive coordinator, Super Bowl champion, to do that rather than coming off of a disappointing loss, and you just wonder how that would, you know, how that would sit with the Lions fans. Matt Urban, he is a contributor to Lions Wire with USAToday.com. Matt, give us a score prediction. You said you would not be surprised if Philadelphia could get this done because they are a good team. They're not just, you know, the puncher underdog to the Apollo Creed on the other sideline, but do you pick them to win?
I want to, but I'm going to use my head. I'm going to say Patriots 30, Eagles 28.
I think that's how most people are, or will be, in my opinion. You just said, their head is going to pick New England. Their heart is going to be with Philadelphia because it's a better story, and people are sick and tired of the champions continuing to win. But it's really hard, isn't it, to pick against Bill Belichick? He has designed defenses and offenses to beat every challenge for so many years, now going for his sixth championship. Nobody's ever done it better. Not Walsh, not Knoll, not Parcells, not Lombardi or anybody else. And it's kind of impossible to pick against a Bill Belichick team in the Super Bowl, isn't it?
I absolutely agree. I mean, yeah, like I do have a gut feeling that, you know, Philly is going to surprise people, but if I'm putting my money on it, there's no way I'm going against Belichick. Same with Saban, you know.
Right.
Clemson got them last year, but I still felt like, you know, comes down to it, chips are down. I trust Saban, I trust Belichick to win these kind of games, and that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, you don't have to like it. You don't have to like it, but you have to recognize
right.
it. That's how I feel. Exactly. You just kind of have to recognize greatness where it is and acknowledge it. It's kind of like basketball. I don't like LeBron James, but you recognize the greatness when you see it, and that's the way it is.
Same way, yeah.
All right. Hey, Matt, really good talking to you. I appreciate it. Matt says Patriots 30 and Eagles 28. It's hard to argue against that. We'll give ours here in a moment, too. But, Matt, thanks for the time. We certainly appreciate you, and enjoy the Super Bowl.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
You got it. There you go. Matt Urban joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket with a little preview of the big game. He says it's hard to fight and argue especially if you had money on the line against the Bill Belichick team. I completely concur. And, Kush, since we're going to do high school basketball after the bottom and coming up at about 4:40, 4:45 or whenever we get done with our bottom of the hour local sports center, I think we kind of probably should make it official, even though all week long we haven't hidden the fact who we're picking.
Right.
Do you have a score that you want to throw out there now, Jim, before we take that time out and get to Bill Clark and talk high school hoops?
Sure, and I kind of brought this one up a little bit yesterday, especially now that we know that Gronk is going to play, so that adds the extra weapon for the Patriots. I'm same as pretty much you and a lot of other guys, Bob. My head is telling me New England. I'd love to see Philly do it, but at the end of the day, I think Brady and what he could still do is going to be too much. And I said this yesterday, and I see no reason to change at this point. I got 30-17 Patriots.
30-17 Patriots, a 13-point win. I said I would think they would win by a couple of touchdowns, so I'm kind of in the same realm you are. I'm just going to go a hair lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go heavier because Philly's defense is good. I don't think they're going to go out there and put up 35, even with Gronk. So in order to kind of keep the spread that I was talking about, a couple of touchdowns, I'm going to drop it down to say 27 to 13, 27 for New England, 13 for the Eagles. That's not my heart. That's my analysis, my prediction for the game. My hope is Philly 46 and New England 3. But my
Bears 55, Giants 3. I give them a chance.
Like, what was the Redskins over the Broncos when Doug Williams threw those four touchdown passes? Wasn't it like
42-10? That was 42-10.
Well, then which one am I thinking of where somebody put up 55?
That was San Francisco two Super Bowls later in after the 89 season.
Denver?
Also no, over Denver, yep.
Or was it Buff?
No, that was over Denver.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's a shame. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to go 27-13, so I'm going to keep it as a 14-point spread since that's what I predicted. That doesn't mean it'll be a blowout. It just means, in fact, it might be very close. It might be 13-10 going into the fourth quarter, and then bang, you know, here comes Tom Brady with a couple of touchdown passes, and I can see that happening. All right, we're going to get a timeout here. We got a bottom-of-the-hour local sports center coming your way on the other side of that. We're going to talk to Bill Clark. Actually, Kush is going to talk to Bill Clark about some high school basketball, of course. We're getting closer and closer and closer to tourney time now that the calendar has flipped over to February, so games mean a lot more, conference titles on the line, et cetera. So we're going to talk to Bill Clark about high school hoops when we come right back on ESPN 106.5
The Ticket. Five the Ticket.
And back we are here, this final segment of this Friday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Kuslin hanging out with you right now. And shifting gears, we talked a lot of football things, obviously, since, of course, the Super Bowl and all its coverage coming up on Sunday. We'll have all of it for you immediately following Buckeye basketball, where they take on Illinois, 11:30 the coverage time, noon the tip-off, about 2:30, somewhere in that ballpark, the coverage of Ohio State will end, and we'll go right into all the Super Bowl coverage, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. But want to switch gears as we do final segment of every Friday show, and once again, welcome in the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, a full slate of games here on this Friday night, including one on these airwaves and a scoreboard show. Bill Clark back on the program with us. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
Doing good, Kush. How are you?
Hey, can't complain. Let's start with your game. 7 o'clock the coverage time. Whitmer is on the road at St. Francis. 7 o'clock again, start of the coverage time here on 106.5 The Ticket. That'll, of course, be followed by the high school basketball scoreboard show. These are two of the three top teams right now in the track, so it should be a dandy of a matchup tonight.
Yeah, definitely, Kush. I mean, these are the three teams that have a chance to win the track. There's no doubt about that. St. John's obviously in the driver's seat right now, undefeated at 8-0. Whitmer defeated St. Francis earlier this year, and then obviously St. Francis with those two losses. So right now, if either of those two teams have any opportunity or any chance to get to a league title or maybe a share of the league title, they're going to have to win tonight. Three losses, if St. Francis drops it tonight and goes to three losses, it'll be tough to make that up. Whitmer still has a game against St. John's. That'll be on Tuesday night at Whitmer, and we'll have it right here on the ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. So Whitmer can take care of their own business, but that game will mean a lot more if they can handle the Knights tonight over at the Pit.
When you have a situation, as of course we're waiting now that it's February, Bill, we're waiting for, and I imagine it'll be another week or two at least before we get the announcement that the playoff matchups and everything. And since everybody goes in high school basketball, I've always wondered this question: how important really is it to win your league's title? Because it doesn't seem to affect much of where you're placed in your playoffs bracket, if you will. How important though is it to still win a league title if you can do it?
Well, I think that's always the goal of every team in the regular season. The first of a couple of goals. The first goal is to win your league title. The second goal is to make a deep run into the playoffs and possibly win a state championship. So a couple of goals for each team. I don't really think as far as the placement in the tournament, a league title is that big of a deal, except when the coaches vote for the top four seeds. If you're one of the top four seeds, you have a little bit more of control of where you are going to place yourself in the bracket and who you will have a chance to play. St. John's right now, I mean, Southview's probably going to be one of the top four picks as well. Northview might be around there. Whitmer could certainly be one of the top four. It's a much bigger district this year than it has been in the past. There'll be two district championships at the University of Toledo the second weekend in March. So it's going to be very exciting as far as boys basketball goes around here when we get to the tournament. But as far as winning a league title and having that have any impetus as to how you do or where you go in the tournament, I don't really think it's that big of a deal. It's nice to say that you're the league champion, but you want to have a good overall record because that's the record that the coaches will look at when everybody votes for the top four seeds and on from there.
And I know you're in tune with all of these things. Do we have a date as to when we'll get some of these playoff matchups, or are they still up in the air on that? I know we're only a week or two away from that.
No, the girls will be drawn this weekend, and okay. The boys will be drawn next Sunday, the 11th, February 11th. So by Monday, the 12th of February, all the brackets and all the sites will be determined. Right now, the four district sites or sectional sites for the boys are going to be Genoa, Fostoria, Start, and Central Catholic. And they won't, even after you make your pick, if you're St. John's, you'll put yourself on the board. You won't know where you're playing mm-hmm. until Start and Central Catholic place themselves on the board, or Start does, I should say. Central Catholic's in a different division. But when Start puts their place on, they can't play at home. So there's going to be some looking there, Central as well. But they're going to have to put themselves on the placard, and then that's where they determine the site. So everybody will put themselves on, but you won't know where you're playing until a few of these teams have picked.
Gotcha. So we're a little over a week away from finding these things out. That's always a fun time of year. Let's stay in the track. One other matchup I want to highlight tonight. The third of the three teams that are at the top of this league right now, St. John's, they're at home to take on Lima Senior, who, as we've discussed before, Bill, not having as good a season as they're used to. Break down this one for us.
Well, I think Lima Senior, this could be, quote-unquote, their Super Bowl. I mean, they would love to be able to be the team that knocks St. John's out of the ranks of the undefeated. They've already lost to St. John's earlier in the year down at Lima. And obviously St. John's is certainly not taking Lima Senior lightly. Just because they're 4-5 and they're just a game over 500 overall, I can guarantee that Ed Heinchel's telling his kids, you cannot take this team that lightly. Last week we saw them against St. Francis, and they gave the Knights everything they could handle, and it came down to a 9-point win for St. Francis with a couple of great free throw shooters at the end for St. Francis, stretching that out. So St. John's will have their hands full. Lima Senior come in with nothing to lose, but I would see St. John's holding court on their home court.
We're talking with Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, here on the ticket. Whitmer at St. Francis, that's the game they will have for you, with all of them on the call tonight starting at 7. And when that game's over, of course, the high school basketball scoreboard show, a score we'd be very interested to hear later tonight as we shift over to the NLL. Is Southview, they're on the road at Anthony Wayne. As we know, this league has been mostly Southview, Northview at the top, but Anthony Wayne, not too shabby themselves this season, and Southview's got to go on the road. What do you see in this one?
Well, it's kind of like the same setup we have tonight in the track. Southview's undefeated, and right now Anthony Wayne is two games back. You go three games back, it's going to be tough to make that up by the time the season ends. So if Anthony Wayne has any interest in winning or sharing a league title, this is a must-win for them. The fact that they're playing at home, Anthony Wayne is a great place to play if you're an Anthony Wayne general, and it's very tough if you're our visiting Southview Cougars. So that should be an interesting ball game tonight, and it'll be a true test for Southview on the road.
Absolutely, it will. To the City League we go, and the only matchup I could think of, you mentioned their name in terms of a sectional site being hosted there, but the Start, who overall has a great record, their opponent, where they go on the road tonight, Rogers, not so great of an overall record, but when it comes to a City League play, and this, of course, as I know you'll mention and have mentioned and will again mention, this is important for the City League semifinals and championship. They're both basically tied at the top of the City League right now, our Start and Rogers. It's at Rogers tonight. How do you see this one going?
Well, I think Rogers is very tough to beat at home, and the fact that they're tied with Start, I mean, Start is one of those teams that looking to make a run in the D1 portion of the playoffs. The fact that they're both 6-1, they pretty much have either, they both, I should say, have secured spots in the City League Final Four unless they just totally blow up over the next couple of weeks, and I don't see that happening because the City League tournament starts on the 22nd of February, so there are only a few more games left in the regular season. But Rogers is tough at home. Start, as you mentioned, 13-3 overall. Rogers, 6-10 overall, but 6-1 in the league. So, boy, I tell you, you talk about being at both ends of the spectrum as far as your league goes. But I'll take the Rams by a couple of points just because they're at home.
Who would we learn more about in this one? Would it be Start or would it be Rogers? Who would we find out more about in terms of what their future potential as we go through February would be?
Well, it's going to be interesting because, as you mentioned, they're both in the City League. They're both 6-1. And the fact is there's the possibility they could match up in the tournament somewhere down the road, depending on where they fall in the Division I bracket. So this is kind of a statement game for both of them to obviously move ahead in the City League standings, but also to kind of imprint themselves as saying, hey, if you want to take a shot at us down the road, you better be ready because we're going to bring everything we got. And both teams can say that.
Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, joining us here on The Ticket. Let's go to the attack. One of my other favorite leagues this basketball season, Cardinal Stritch. They're taking on Emmanuel Christian on the road. So it's at Emmanuel Christian, but that's a top of the league versus bottom of the league. The matchup, though, that jumps out at me is Toledo Christian at Maumee Valley. These are basically your number two and your number three teams. And what is, as we've talked about plenty of times over the course of our spots together, Bill, this is a strong league this year, but to me the highlight game is Toledo Christian at Maumee Valley.
Well, it sets up just as we talked about in the Northern Lakes League in the track tonight, Cush, the fact that Cardinal Stritch right now has a two-game lead on Toledo Christian. Also, Maumee Valley only has played nine games. This will be their 10th league game, but the point is they both have two losses, so a loss tonight is going to push one of those teams out of the chance to at least share a tie in the tack. The fact that Cardinal Stritch is in the driver's seat by two games, they're going to have to stub their toe a couple of times coming down the stretch. And as you mentioned before, this is the top half and bottom half league. In other words, Danbury, Gibsonburg, Emmanuel Christian, and Northwood are struggling. Two wins is the most any of those four teams have had in the league, where you've got Ottawa Hills at 6-4. They could play a spoiler. They're out of the championship race, no doubt about that, but John Lindsay's kids could play a spoiler down the road. And again, Maumee Valley with two losses and Toledo Christian with two losses, they're still hanging on to a thread that they might be able to get a share of the TAC championship, but Cardinal Stritch is definitely running the show out there.
One last question before we let you go. Bill Clark, the wonderful voice of high school sports, joining us here on The Ticket. Of course, their call tonight will be Whitmer at St. Francis, 7 o'clock the coverage time here on The Ticket, followed by the high school scoreboard show. I'm going to ask your thoughts on a game, but it's a different game. We've been basically asking, as I think you know where I'm going with this, everybody's thoughts over the course of the week when we talk to them. Patriots-Eagles on Sunday. Bill Clark, who do you got?
Well, you know, until somebody takes Tom Brady out of the format, I just can't see the Patriots losing. I mean, the only two times that Brady has lost a Super Bowl, it's been two amazing plays at the end of the game. He could very well be 7-0 in Super Bowls.
So true.
You know, Knowles, you know, he's a good quarterback. He's proven himself in the playoffs, but this is the biggest stage in his life. And I just think you give Belichick and Brady 2 weeks to prepare, and you're playing against them, you're going to have to play pretty much a perfect game. And I just see Brady and Belichick picking up another ring, and Tom Terrific keep moving up the GOAT ranks.
Bill, excellent call and very good points there. We always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Have a great call tonight, Whitmer at St. Francis. It all gets underway 7 o'clock right here on 106.5 The Ticket. Scoreboard show to follow, and then a couple of games next week. You mentioned Tuesday, St. John's at Whitmer, and then next Friday, Central Catholic at Whitmer. So a lot of fun games coming up on the high school basketball hardwood. Enjoy and have a great call tonight. We'll catch up with you next Friday.
All right, Cush, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
That is Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. And that's about going to wrap it up for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us here on this Friday edition. Stay tuned, everybody. We switch gears to drive time coming up next here on 106.5 The Ticket. I'm in for Mike Miller. We're going to have a lot of a breakdown of Super Bowl 52 and how we think it's going to go, and a little bit of thought on the Blake Griffin day debut for the Pistons last night. It was a good one. Hint, hint. So stick around for that quick timeout as we shift gears from Extravaganza to Drive Time. Yours truly in for Mike Miller. Enjoy the weekend. All the big game coverage on Sunday. It's a fascinating day broadcast-wise. We got Ohio State against Illinois, 11:30 the coverage time, 12 o'clock the tip-off, or somewhere between 2:15, 2:30, that broadcast will end, and we'll switch right on over to Westwood One's coverage of Super Bowl 52, taking you all the way through all the pregame festivities and every play of the game through the final notes of postgame. And we'll see you on Monday. Stick around for Drive Time. That's next. The Ticket.